Welcome to the Shortwave Report for May 25th, 2012. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's www.outfarpress.com, you can find a schedule for dozens of international broadcasters in English. There you can also listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Spanish National Radio, China Radio International, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, Radio Havana Cuba, and The Voice of Russia. We'll begin with Spanish National Radio. Teachers and students across Spain staged a strike this week to protest government cuts. Quebec and Chile saw huge educational demonstrations as well. Unemployment rates among young people continues to rise globally. Last weekend in Italy, protest candidates were elected in several key cities. The United States and Pakistan had a row over reopening military supply routes to Afghanistan. Spanish National Radio.
A 24-hour strike by teachers and pupils across Spain, the first of its kind at all levels of public education, has seen many schools and universities closed in protest against government cuts. The unions say that 4 out of every 5 teachers didn't turn up for work, whereas the government puts the figure at less than 20%. Students and parents also joined the protest. Tonight in Madrid and Barcelona there were big demonstrations to follow up on the strike action. As many as tens of thousands of people congregated in the centre of Madrid, and students could be heard shouting on the streets of Barcelona.
The cuts will see class sizes increase, teachers will have to work more hours for the same pay, and university tuition fees will increase by up to 25%. The government says the cuts of more than 20% are necessary so that it can meet its spending targets for this year.
And across the Atlantic, student protests are also continuing in the Canadian province of Quebec against the government's efforts to end a 3-month student strike over rises in tuition fees. Montreal is holding a big demonstration at the moment, and police there say that more than 200 demonstrators have taken place since February. More than 300 students were arrested on Sunday following clashes.
And in Chile, university and secondary school students continued to demand free education after a massive demonstration in Santiago last week drew tens of thousands of protesters. Chile is the only country in Latin America that charges for university education. In a conciliatory move, President Sebastián Piñera has proposed ending reliance on private banks for student loans.
The number of young people without a job now stands at almost 75 million worldwide, according to the International Labour Organization. The ILO says in the European Union, 1 in 5 people under the age of 24 is unemployed.
In Greece and Spain, where the jobless rate for youth stands at 52%, the ILO warns of a possible lost generation as a result of the financial and economic crisis. The UN agency describes youth unemployment in Spain as dramatic and says many youngsters are trapped in low-paid, low-skilled jobs, and others have simply given up looking for work.
Italians have delivered a blow to traditional parties by electing protest candidates to govern several key cities, signaling a major shift in the political landscape ahead of a general election next year. In the most sensational result in 2 rounds of local polls, comedian Beppe Grillo and his 5-star movement consolidated its rapid rise from a fringe group to national contender by winning the mayor's office in Parma, a city of 190,000 people.
The two main parties in the right-left coalition that supports Prime Minister Mario Monti, architect of Italy's tough austerity program, did not fare well in the local elections held on Sunday and Monday. By putting the parties that support the technocrat Prime Minister in Parliament on the defensive, they could make it more difficult for Mr. Monti to push through highly unpopular measures aimed at avoiding a Greek-style debt crisis.
Today's vote in nearly 120 towns was largely overshadowed by two tragic events over the weekend. On Sunday, a strong earthquake struck a large area of northern Italy, killing at least 7 people, while a Saturday bombing in front of a school in southern Italy killed a teenage girl and ignited fears of a return to the political violence of the 1970s and 80s. In the first round of the local polls, tax hikes, rising unemployment, and a series of corruption scandals contributed to driving voters away from the party of former Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi and his center-left rivals towards Mr. Grillo's movement. A row between the U.S. and Pakistan over supply routes to Afghanistan is threatening to overshadow the summit of NATO leaders in Chicago. The two sides have been unable to reach agreement on Pakistan's conditions for reopening the routes, closed after a U.S. airstrike killed some 24 troops.
In return for reopening the routes, Pakistan has called for a public apology for the killings, a review of U.S. policy on drone attacks inside of Pakistan, and an increase of the current transit charge of $250 per vehicle. U.S. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta said before the summit that it was not likely that the U.S. would be prepared to pay the higher amount demanded by Pakistan.
Those reports were from Spanish National Radio, heard from 5 to 6 p.m. at 6055, and podcasting at www.rtve.es. All the times I'm announcing are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so adjust them to your time zone. Next, China Radio International. North Korea now says that the failed satellite launch was never intended as a nuclear weapons test. China was angered by a U.S. Defense Department report questioning the defensive nature of China's military development. While the U.K. does not use the euro, the Greek debt crisis seriously affects them, and a Greek withdrawal from the eurozone would have many consequences on the British pound. China Radio International.
North Korea now says that it never planned to conduct nuclear tests during its satellite development program. Foreign Ministry spokesperson for the North Korean side has made the remarks in a statement denouncing the declaration of the recent G8 summit in the United States. Pyongyang says the U.S. and other countries have fabricated the nuclear test allegations, adding that it only plans to develop satellite technology for peaceful use.
Despite repeated opposition voiced by the Chinese side, the U.S. Department of Defense has issued a military report on China, questioning the defensive nature of China's military development. The Chinese Ministry of Defense is characterizing the report as a way for the U.S. side to find excuses for a new round of arms sales to Taiwan. Luo Yuan, Deputy Secretary General of the China Association for Military Science, says the report shows an ambivalent U.S. mindset towards China, with a willingness on one hand to engage with China while at the same time taking steps to try to contain China. Law is suggesting that three things need to change for the U.S.-China relationship to move forward.
Firstly, the U.S. sells arms to Taiwan, which goes against their promise to China. The U.S. has promised not to sell weapons to Taiwan, or at least gradually reduce the quality and quantity of arms sales since the establishment of diplomatic relations and finally solve the problem. Another obstacle is that the U.S. plans and vessels always conduct strategic investigations around China's southeast coastal areas and the South China Sea, which shows no friendly attitude. The U.S. should give an explanation to Chinese people and must end the hostilities.
Earlier this month, the U.S. House of Representatives passed a bill that compels the U.S. government to sell at least 66 F-16CD fighters to Taiwan. Luo Yuan suggests that bill is only going to hurt the more friendly ties between the mainland and Taiwan that have been developing in recent years.
The US has two strategic purposes. Firstly, it's trying to find excuses for its return to the Asian Pacific world. It says that China has obtained the ability to fight against its intervention in some areas. This reminds us that they are actually interfering in Asian Pacific affairs. As a result, this excuse is unreasonable. A second excuse is that the military strength across the straits is imbalanced, so the US should sell high-end weapons to Taiwan. For example, the US has just approved the sales of 66 F-16 CD warplanes to Taiwan. This report actually serves as a preparation to the arms selling. I think people across the straits should have a clear recognition of this intention.
The Pentagon's report does call for increased cooperation between the US and China in the field of peacekeeping and combating piracy. However, Luo Yuan says if the United States side wants to reach those goals, it's going to have to clear the obstacles he's kidding on.
Although the UK is not in the Eurozone, it doesn't mean it's exempt from the consequences of the current debt crisis. Britain's central bank governor, Mervyn King.
The fact that we're not in the euro area does not mean we're exempt from the consequences of what happens. Our banking system is exposed to the euro area, and that will have an impact on their capital position. And our trade position is. We saw last year our exports to the non-EU countries rise, to the EU they fell. So we're certainly going to be affected.
But as to whether Greece should stay or exit from the eurozone and what damages or benefits such moves could bring, the governor of the Bank of England is reluctant to say. So is the British Prime Minister, David Cameron.
It either has to make up or it is looking at a potential breakup. That is the choice they have to make, and it's a choice they cannot long put off.
I think diplomatically Britain just wants to keep out of the debate because of the fact that it isn't a member of the Eurozone.
Philip Booth, a former Bank of England advisor on financial stability issues, now teaches at the Cass Business School at City University London.
But I'd certainly be very surprised if David Cameron and Mervyn King didn't have a view privately, and I think it might actually be better if these things were discussed more publicly, because should Greece leave, there are going to be a whole series of consequences and difficult problems which are going to have to be managed, and the more these things are discussed in the open, the more likely we are to be able to find appropriate solutions to managing these problems.
Although the President of the European Commission, José Manuel Barroso, has repeatedly declared his intent to ensure Greece remains a part of the zone, Professor Booth says a Greek exit seems to be the most stable and possibly the only option available.
2 years ago, perhaps there were some other potential options. We needed a big internal adjustment within the Greek economy, restructuring of Greek debt, and so on. But now I think it's reached the point where those things could not happen quickly enough to prevent the continued chaos within the Eurozone.
Booth says if a Greek exit is successful, then other countries with debt problems such as Portugal, Spain and Italy could be queuing to leave the Eurozone. Is this a desirable situation for the UK? Politicians may be hesitant to answer, but average citizens are more willing to express their views. Here's Cahal Mihan.
The UK has to supplement it as well. So it means that there's going to be less money going out of the UK because, like, you know, it's struggling. The bottom line is that, you know, everybody's trying to save money, and that's one way of saving money. Does that mean it's going to be good or bad? But I don't know.
Earlier in the year, the money spent by the UK in helping prop up the Eurozone was reported to total £12.5 billion, around £500 for each household. For CRI, I'm Tu Yun, reporting from London.
Those reports were from China Radio International, heard from 4 to 5 p.m. at 11970, and from 6 p.m. to 11 at either 9790-6020 or 6190, or on the web at english.cri.cn. On to Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. More on the potential consequences of a Greek withdrawal from the Eurozone. Would this begin an unraveling of the entire economic body, and what would it look like? Deutsche Welle.
Well, on Thursday in Greece, a caretaker government was sworn in, which will lead the country into fresh elections on June the 17th. This follows the May 6th vote, which left no party with enough votes to form a government. Greece's political limbo has sent the euro and European stock markets plunging. And there's little guarantee that the new elections will produce a viable government that will implement a massive EU-IMF rescue package. So how likely is it that Greece will exit the eurozone? I put that question to our business correspondent, Stephen Beard.
It's more likely now than at any other time during this crisis. Because of politics. The Greek people have essentially rebelled. In the last election, most people voted against austerity and reform. In other words, they voted to tear up the bailout deal already agreed with the EU and the IMF. Now, if that trend is confirmed in the next election, as seems likely, and if an anti-bailout, anti-austerity government takes power, then Greece could well be denied the next chunk of bailout money from the EU and the IMF. It'll run out of cash, default on its debts, and could well crash out of the eurozone.
But why would that mean Greece quitting the euro? Because, I mean, the Greek people don't want to drop the euro. More than 70% say they want to stay in the eurozone. So can they be forced out?
This is a fundamental question. We don't really know the answer. There's no legal mechanism for forcing Greece out. But it could well happen anyway. We don't want to get too technical here, but a messy, disorderly default would likely trigger a huge run on the Greek banks. In fact, it's already started, but it could accelerate. Anyone with euros in Greece would want to get them out of the country, or at least out of the banks. Greece then would need to impose a ban on capital leaving the country. It would perhaps need to start printing its own money again so that it could keep cash circulating through the economy, stop the economy absolutely collapsing. So it would, practically speaking, be out of the eurozone and back with the drachma.
But surely the Greeks can't print billions of drachmas overnight.
No, and it's not as if they've probably been doing it secretly for the past few months, because word would get out and that would trigger absolute panic. One suggestion is that the Greek government would suddenly announce on a Friday night that all the banks would be closed for a week and the borders sealed, and the authorities would then stamp every euro banknote they can get their hands on with a D, indicating that these notes are no longer euros, they're now drachmas.
So what effect would that have on Greece and the Greek economy?
Initially, chaos. The value of the new currency, the new drachma, would plummet. Greece would find it cripplingly expensive to buy foreign goods. Inflation would likely soar. In the short term, there would be huge economic dislocation. In the longer term, Greece could eventually be better off. It would have shed this huge burden of debt. It'll be able to set its own interest rates, devalue its own currencies, make its exports cheaper. It could then start growing again after five long grinding years of recession.
And what would the impact be on the rest of the eurozone?
Well, in the short term, again, it would be extremely messy. First of all, investors and speculators would say, who's next? They will start dumping the government bonds of other heavily indebted eurozone countries, Portugal, Ireland, Italy, Spain. Their borrowing costs would then go through the roof. They can't all be bailed out. So in the worst case scenario, the euro could really start to unravel. And the disintegration of the world's number two reserve currency would be an event to behold. It would have major ructions in global financial markets.
And that was our business correspondent, Stephen Beard.
That report was from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, mediacenter.dw-world.de. Next, Radio Havana, Cuba. Brazil is speculating on the potential outcomes of the upcoming Rio Plus 20 Conference on Sustainable Development. A former Colombian senator says that the destabilization along the border with Venezuela is a defense strategy set up by former President Uribe. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Brazil called to turn the UN Conference on Sustainable Development, or RioPlus20, into a fiesta of multilateralism as a legitimate way to discuss and solve global issues at the United Nations. However, Undersecretary of the Environment, Energy, Science and Technology at the Brazilian Foreign Ministry, Luis Alberto Figueiredo Machado, said that nothing will be achieved if we fail to inspire the civil society, whose involvement is essential to turn the promise of sustainable development into a reality. Figueiredo read a message from Foreign Minister Antonio Patriota to participants in the debate The Road to RioPlus20 and Beyond, called by the UN General Assembly. He said the governments alone can do very little, and society is the main player in the solution of problems and on the way to sustainable development.
The former Colombian senator, Piedad Córdoba, said that there is a destabilizing situation on the Colombian-Venezuelan border, which he attributes to a defense strategy of the country's former president, Álvaro Uribe, who she said feels visceral hatred towards Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. Córdoba said, "For me, the situation on the borders is a defense strategy that Uribe is using to make people believe that he is defending us from a dictator. What has happened in recent days is extremely serious." The former senator said that Venezuelan opposition is linked to Uribe and said the election campaign of former Colombian president was just like the one of the candidate who will face Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez in the presidential elections on October 7, Enrique Capriles. Uribe has recently launched repeated allegations that Chavez is protecting the leaders of the FARC and drug traffickers, and has even accused his successor, Juan Manuel Santos, of seeking agreements with the FARC through the dictatorship of the Venezuelan president. Chavez said today that he preferred not to respond to allegations of Uribe.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba, heard from 1 p.m. to 2 at 11760, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6060, 6010, or 6000. Also streaming on the web from 6 p.m. to midnight at www.radiohc.cu, and now podcasting at World Radio Network, which is wrn.org. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or would like to make a donation for production cost of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Donations are the sole financial support I receive for producing this weekly program. We will conclude with the voice of Russia. At the NATO summit, leaders reaffirmed their commitment to ending the war in Afghanistan by 2014. However, many think that this is just a rebranding of the war, since the U.S. and NATO armies will remain in the country. The voice of Russia.
On the last day of the NATO summit in Chicago, the bloc's leaders have reaffirmed their commitment to ending the war in Afghanistan in 2014 and vowed support to the Afghans. But is it going to be the end of the occupation, and will Al-Qaeda return? Some media reports are calling the new stage of the war as simply one of rebranding, since the US and NATO-backed armies don't intend to leave Afghanistan, even though it appears to be this way on the surface.
President Barack Obama, speaking at the NATO summit, declared that the Afghan war was now effectively over, while UK Prime Minister David Cameron said the handover plan was on track and on target. However, despite their optimistic appraisal, NATO officials have conceded the possibility of Al-Qaeda and other groups returning after the West's withdrawal. A senior British official said, "It is unrealistic to assume that Afghanistan is going to be completely secure, and there is no possibility of a terrorist threat re-emerging."
Obama in turn said there will never be an optimal point at which the United States' work in Afghanistan will be finished. However, he says the U.S. strategy in Afghanistan is sound, as it plans to withdraw troops from the country. On Monday, Obama said that he cannot afford a whitewash and not receive the best information from military advisors in Afghanistan. In turn, British generals have drawn up plans to keep up to 200 British Special Forces soldiers in Afghanistan for counterterrorism missions after 2014.
And while the West is publicly saying one thing, they are doing another. Mass media reported last month that Obama went on a secret trip to Afghanistan, where he signed an agreement pledging U.S. financial and military support to the country for 10 years beyond the 2014 withdrawal. Obama said after his lengthy talks with Hamid Karzai, "We still have a lot of work to do, and there will be great challenges ahead." The U.S. president also thanked other nations in Central Asia and Russia for their roles in providing critical transit for supplies.
Continuing along on this deceiving train of thought, at the recent NATO summit, the leaders pulled a sleight of hand, as the alliance declared in a note, which was not widely covered in Western mass media, that while NATO will maintain a significant presence in Afghanistan after 2014, this will not be a combat mission. NATO said, "As transition of security responsibility is completed at the end of 2014, NATO will have made the shift from a combat mission to a new training, advising, and assistance mission, which will be of a different nature to the current ISAF mission." The document also vowed to provide a sound legal basis for the new NATO-led mission, such as a UN Security Council resolution.
Brian Becker, the director of the ANSWER anti-war coalition, said that the U.S., Germany, and NATO do not intend to give up Afghanistan, a resource-rich, strategic part of the world, for a very long time. They have discovered, what, $1 trillion in untapped mineral deposits there?
In a statement to media, Becker said, "NATO forces and the U.S. are in the process of rebranding what they anticipate will be a long-term occupation, going way beyond 2014. He continued by saying, "They can call it troops, trainers, or Afghan military bases instead of NATO military bases. Whatever they do, however, they brand it, NATO and U.S. forces intend to stay, as we know from the strategic partnership agreements signed by Afghan President Hamid Karzai and U.S. President Obama, and then by President Karzai and German Chancellor Angela Merkel."
Becker stressed that the U.S. has scripted the situation in Afghanistan to be perceived by the general public in a particular way. He explained this comment by saying, "They have created what is a proxy government that lacks credibility, and lacking credibility, it is thus dependent on foreign occupation forces." He continued, "Look, the real goal of the U.S. is to secure military bases in the strategic area and, broadly speaking, in southern Asia for a long, long time to come."
Meanwhile, public frustration with the war is growing in America. According to an AP poll released this month, 66% of Americans oppose the war, while only 27% support the effort. A recent Fox News poll revealed that 78% of Americans approve of the U.S. withdrawing military troops from Afghanistan. According to an ABC News Washington Post poll, when asked, "All in all, considering the costs to the United States versus the benefits to the United States, do you think the war in Afghanistan has been worth fighting or not?" 66% of U.S. respondents said not worth fighting, while only 30% said worth it.
That report was from the Voice of Russia. Russia is now heard from 6 p.m. to 11 at 15425-9800 and 9665, and through their website, www.english.ruvr.ru. All the times I've announced are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time. Please adjust them to your time zone. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people to listen to international broadcast using a shortwave radio at home. However, if you use the internet, listening globally is also quite easy. See the links at this program's website. Every Friday morning, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's www.outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find internet links for international broadcasters, make a safe donation through PayPal, and get advice for listening at home. This shortwave report is free to rebroadcast upon notification. This shortwave report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.